All right, we're back for another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about a skill that Tony is very good at, and that's how to get anyone to do what you want without even realizing that you're doing what they want. I know you're smiling right now.
I know. But isn't this based off one of your favorite books?
It is, but I mean, you didn't read this book and you were doing these things, right?
It's funny. It's Influence, right?
That's correct.
Is that the book? So it's funny. I think, hold on, I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I feel like I own a book or I have checked it out from the library at some point, but I don't think I've actually read it. And it is on my list of books to read because it has come so highly recommended by you and a couple other people. So it is on my list to read for sure, probably 2022. Well, my Kindle broke. So I just replaced my Kindle with an iPad, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, but whatever. So anyway, it's on my list now.
Okay, I can't believe you haven't read it. Maybe it's because you wrote it.
Yes, I secretly wrote the book.
Cialdini copied you.
Yes. So I'm curious as to why is this one? Because you don't have a lot of favorite things. So why is this your favorite book? Or one of your favorites?
Because it's really what taught me how to sell.
Okay.
You know me. I mean, I was an engineer and not used to selling or marketing anything at all. Like, that was never, ever part of my job description.
Yeah.
And then I read the book, and it actually helped at work, too. Because what ended up happening is when I was working full-time, I went from coder to manager to director. And once you get to director, your whole job is no longer to do any technical stuff. It's actually to work with all the different groups within the company and make sure you can get what you want. And make sure, you know, your group or the people that you represent, you know, get the right resources and everything.
Yeah.
But it often means taking someone else's group's time.
Okay. Yeah, so it's always a fight for...
It's not a fight. It's all about, like, just talking and, like... Well, we can talk about some of the things. I mean, you haven't read the book, so I'm just kind of curious, what do you think that you do to get people to do what you want? It's interesting because you haven't read the book yet.
No, I haven't.
So it'd be interesting to hear what your perspective is.
Okay, so... I feel like I'm giving away the keys to the kingdom right now. I don't know if I want to tell you. It's a multi-pronged for me. And I will say that for me, I think a lot of this comes naturally. I don't think about a lot of these things when I'm doing them. But my first tip would be when you are... And I don't want to say when you're trying to get what you want, but when you're trying to sell something or negotiate or have something come through in your direction, I think the first thing you need to do is put the other party at ease. So you can't make them feel like they're negotiating with you because everybody wants to win deep down. I mean, I've never met anybody that doesn't want to feel like they walked away with the better end of the deal. Most people are not okay with that, even if they won't outwardly say it. So I think for me, the first step is to put whoever you're dealing with on the other side to make them comfortable and not feel like they're actually negotiating with you or that they're not having to give something up. So that's number one.
Okay. How do you do that?
Good gravy. I don't know.
What tactics have you used on me these past several years?
Steve, if I told you how much I love what you've done with the website. How easy it is for me to use. Okay.
Those were all a ploy.
So I think you can definitely use compliments and flattery, but not in a, I think of like Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver, where he was always like saying nice things to Mrs. Cleaver and it was super like disingenuous. And so it's not that, right? It's not Eddie Haskell.
The whole audience did not know what you just said because chances are they did not watch
Leave It to Beaver. Okay, go watch Leave It to Beaver. But Eddie Haskell was the neighbor boy, and every time he would come over to see if the Cleaver kids could play, he'd always say, "Oh, Mrs. Cleaver, you look so nice today. The house smells delicious. What are you making for dinner?" And he'd always have these like really syrupy compliments that felt very fake because he wanted to get the kids to play with him, right? So he wanted to be able to have the kids come out and play. So he'd always be flattering Mrs. Cleaver. But I think that so you don't want to do it that way. It has to be you have to find something about the other person that you can connect with or compliment or the connection is a big thing too. Like find that connection point I do this a lot. We talked about this in another episode on Twitter, where I find a connection point with somebody that I want to meet. Like, maybe they like the NBA. I like the NBA. Maybe they're into running. I'm a runner. So I find that connection point. And so you start the conversation off in a very non-threatening way, and you start with a commonality, or you start with, you know, hey, you know, I read that article that you put out in Forbes, and it was just fascinating to me that you think blah, blah, blah about Bitcoin, right? I don't know anything about Bitcoin. Tell me something about Bitcoin, right? You put them at ease by actually like having them start the conversation with you. So it feels to them like the ball is in their court and not the ball in your court, even though you're still controlling everything on the other side.
Huh. Okay. So the direct correlation in the book,
okay,
the principle of influence, is liking.
Okay.
Basically, get the person to like
yeah.
you. Right? So what you're doing here is, from what you described, is you're putting them at ease, but that's really, you know, getting them to like you and want to talk to you.
Right. And you do that.
And be more open to you.
You do that by letting them talk about themselves.
Ah. Huh.
Everybody likes okay. to talk about themselves or something that they're not everybody likes to talk directly about themselves, but everybody likes to talk about something they're passionate about. So you quickly find their passion point, and then that's how you steer the conversation. So they feel like they're directing the conversation. They feel like they're doing all the talking, but in reality, you've sort of facilitated all of that by finding that commonality first.
That's actually my super secret tactic.
I know it is. I'm very aware. Because when you told me one time that that's what you did, I was like, oh, I know. I know you do that. It's like watching myself in a mirror.
But it's actually not a tactic. I'm actually genuinely interested. And I'm kind of like a private person.
Yeah.
So unless someone like pries the information out of me, I'm not going to talk about myself usually.
So, and you and I are the opposite in that. Whereas I'm not a private person, but I also feel like my life is a series of like spirals and spider webs and rabbit holes. So like, I don't want to start talking about myself because I'll never stop. So, because it's just, there's just so many different ways it can go. And so I would much rather have the other person be the one talking in the conversation.
That's true. If we had just met and you led with what's going on in your life, I'd be like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Talk to you later. But, and if you get, and the other thing too, is if this is someone you don't know or don't have a lot of familiarity with and you get them talking, you'll find the commonality so that you can sort of create, because you, I like to create that connection with people, right? So you get them talking, you get them talking about things that they care about, things that they like, things about themselves. And then at some point during that conversation, there's going to be most likely something that you can connect on. Now, I have had conversations with people that there is nothing, like absolutely nothing. And usually after a period of time, I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to give up on this. Like, I can't. It doesn't happen terribly often, but there are just people out there that are like zero in common, like nothing, like not a single thing. And so at some point, I just have to like walk away from that.
I've never seen that happen to you ever.
I mean, I can carry it on for a while, but.
Yeah. I think. So this is why I think it's important to just kind of know a little bit about a lot of things.
Yes.
Enough so that you can actually just have a conversation about it. You don't have to be the expert in
no.
it.
No.
But this is kind of, this is going to sound really geeky. This is kind of why I read the encyclopedia when I was younger.
You're gonna love my counter example to what you are going to say right now. You're going to love my.
Okay. Well, no, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't know a lot. About a lot of, I mean, I know a little bit about a lot of things, but I know a lot about only very few things, let's just say. I want to hear what you have to say.
So you started reading the encyclopedia to get to this level. So what I realized 10 or 11 years ago is when I started going to events that a lot of the events I went to were male dominated. And there, I mean, I hate to say this, but there are still not as much, it gets better every year, but there's still this sort of prejudice against females in certain spaces. And so they feel like you don't know anything or you don't know enough or, you know, they don't feel like they're going to talk to you. Like you're the assistant, right? That's kind of the impression that people get sometimes. And so what I realized is that if I listen to sports radio, if I listen to ESPN radio every morning and I was taking my kids to school, I knew just enough about every sport to have a conversation with anyone about any sport, any like major league sport, right? NFL, NBA, NCAA, hockey, like stuff that I've never watched a hockey game, right? But I can talk about hockey enough to like have a conversation with someone who's really into hockey. And I realized that I think it was an event I was at with you, and it was one of the like trafficking conversion or whatever, like pretty male dominated event, right? And we were at a bar, right. And I started talking to somebody, and I could talk enough about the NFL, and I don't watch the NFL, but I could talk enough about the NFL because I listen to sports radio every morning, to where I could talk to every single person in the bar because that's what they were talking about at the time. And then once I was like proved myself in that, then they were willing to talk business with me later because I sort of like made it through the first hurdle. But honestly, that was the best business thing I've ever done, was listen to sports radio.
That is very interesting. You actually follow the NBA.
I do follow the NBA, and I do follow college football. So I can talk about those two things without that. But the other sports I don't follow, I mean, like not seriously, right? But all you need is the highlights, right? You hear all the commentators talking about it. You watch a little bit of First Take or whatever. You know all the hot takes, and that's all you need to know.
So is there the equivalent for females? Like,
watch some TikToks. I'm not even joking, actually. That's probably what you should do.
Are you serious?
Spend some time on Reels or TikToks. Yeah. And I follow certain like Instagram accounts for the same reason of topics that I'm not super interested in, but I get enough to where I can maintain conversations about topics that I don't know a lot about.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not okay. You. I can't hold a conversation about engineering or coding.
Well, I never have those conversations. No one wants to hold a conversation with me about that stuff.
We talked for 6 hours at the bar about microprocessor design.
It was great. It was
riveting. I mean, we were the only people everyone left. I don't know why.
Well, here are my go-tos, actually. Like, everyone likes to talk about relationships, family, sports. Just relationships, actually, in themselves can stand alone.
Yeah. Relationships, people's kids. People like to talk about their kids, activities. Yep. Sports, travel. Travel's a good one.
Yeah, those are my go-tos, like if I don't have anything else.
Yeah.
Like if no one wants to talk about microprocessor design, those are what I.
Yeah, and if no one wants to talk about my shoe collection, then that's where I go.
Okay, so get someone to like you. Yeah. So we already talked about that. What else you got?
Well, then it's once they like find that commonality, because then it goes from like likability to almost relationship level.
Ooh.
Which I think is important because it's much harder to say no to someone you have a relationship with. It's like today, I just got back from the grocery store. And when I walked out of the grocery store, it's Christmas time. There was the person ringing the bell, you know, for the donations. I think it's like Salvation Army or something. You know, I don't know if they do that out in California, but they stand outside the grocery stores and ring the bell every Christmas time. And I just don't even like lift my head up. I'm like, I mean, I was also forgot that we were recording. So I was racing out of the grocery store. But like I would never even make eye contact with that person. But if I looked over there and saw that it was someone I knew, there would be no possible way I couldn't go over there and put a dollar in, because I knew the person, right? If it was someone that I knew from school or cheer or anything like that, I would feel very guilty not putting money in if I had any sort of relationship or connection with that person. But because I have zero connection, I have no problem walking by and not putting a dollar in.
I'm trying to think of what principle of influence that falls under. Maybe it would be commitment, I guess. Like if you can get someone to commit, in this case, it'd be to commit to being your friend.
That's a big commitment. That is a lot of ask right there.
So in the book, like if you get someone to take an action,
mm-hmm.
any action really, and kind of repeat, in this case, I guess it would be just being your friend or whatnot, then they're much more likely to follow through on something else.
Yeah. And I think to piggyback on that, and I'm pretty sure this is in the book because I think I've read an excerpt of this, is that I always want to give something first. So
yes.
It's the principle of once they receive something from you, there's, I don't know if it's guilt or what attached to it, where they feel.
No, it's called reciprocity, yes. Not guilt. Poor Cialdini's like, oh my God.
Listen, I feel guilty. I don't know. But if you give something first, then they feel, I honestly think they feel burdened to give you something back. It's the whole reason why the companies mail you the like free sticker, address stickers or the pen.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although that doesn't work with me because I'm like, I don't need more stickers. But
actually, it doesn't work with me either. Maybe it's because I read the book. I'm like, this is,
I know what you're doing to
three.
Me.
This is page 276. Yeah. I'm not falling for that.
But it does work. I mean, and it I've seen it work when it's kind of like when we negotiate for Seller Summit. you know, we have these set packages, right, of different sponsorship levels that you can buy, and they include specific things. But we, you know, a lot of that's negotiable, where if you don't want something, you don't have to have that, we'll trade it out. But I think the second we make that concession, we trade something out, we give them something else, then there's a reciprocity there that it kind of helps them move forward in the negotiating.
I have a really good example. So I was trying to get a sponsor. And, you know, the discussions actually went pretty well, but, you know, they hadn't made a decision yet. So what I did is I made a TikTok and promoted their company, and then it got 10,000 views. And I said, oh yeah, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I just mentioned your company on TikTok. I think what you do is great. And then we got that sponsor right away.
Yeah. I mean, that works.
That's reciprocity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And it has to be sincere. It can't be like, hey, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll do this. And then, you know, you give me this back. You just have to do it openly.
Well, and I think that's sort of the foundation of all of this, is if you're not doing something that's genuine, it doesn't work.
I just wanted to add that this is the main principle that was responsible for all of my wife quit her job, actually. Because in the beginning, like if you're not doing content, you're probably thinking to yourself, hey, why should you give out all this stuff for free?
Mm-hmm.
And that was... it took me a long time to wrap my head around that principle. So if you think about it, both of our businesses, it's all about reciprocity, right? We give out all this stuff for free.
Yep.
And then people, I don't want to use the word guilt, but they feel like they want to pay us back or, you know, help us back. And so they sign up for the class. I mean, I'd like to think it's a combination of both liking and reciprocity.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a combination of both.
You know, what's interesting is I've seen this with our friend Laurie from Passionate Penny Pincher. You know, she shares content, recipes, DIYs, but her main bread and butter is sharing deals. You know, here's where you can get a 60-inch TV, you know, on Black Friday for $200, whatever. And that's what she does. Well, her reciprocity is so strong is that when she talks about any product on Facebook Lives or things like that, her customers or her audience will actually say to her, hey, is this an affiliate link? Because I want to make sure you get credit. Like, they will ask because they want her to get the credit for it. So, I mean, it's really crazy how it works. And I've seen it, people like just full on admitting like, hey, I want to buy this through your link because I want to make sure you get the 10% or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, this works in e-commerce land too. So we'll give out a free handkerchief or something.
Yeah.
With any purchase. I mean, actually, they don't even have to purchase. They would just have to pay the shipping. But just giving something for free up front works really well, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. So another, this is actually something I've been doing a long time, but I didn't realize it was a tactic until I read, what's the book, the FBI negotiator book?
Voss.
Yes. It came from this
I wish
book.
You had never read that book.
Listen, I was already doing all of it.
Never split the difference. Never split
the difference.
Is that what you're thinking of?
Yes.
Yeah.
So another thing that works in getting people to do what you want is to not say anything. And it is shocking to me how well this works. Because when I read it, I started thinking about it. I was like, I actually do this not on purpose. I never knew I was doing it. It was just sort of a default for me. But when people do it to me, I fall hook, line, and sinker. And basically, when you're talking to somebody or you're negotiating and you just stop talking, people will talk themselves into a deal because people hate silence and they hate that dead space and they feel like they need to fill it. So they'll just keep talking. They'll give you all the information you need. They'll just talk themselves into anything. And it's the weirdest thing, but I noticed that, and the first time I ever noticed this was when I was buying a house in Maryland and I had a home inspector and I was talking to him on the phone and he said, well, I always get there about 30 minutes before the appointment. And I said, okay, well, the realtor's not going to be there. And he said, exactly. He's like, I like to get there when it's just the homeowner. He's like, because all I do is introduce myself and just ask them a couple questions about their family. And within 10 minutes, they will tell you everything that's wrong with the house because he just doesn't talk. He listens. Right. And so they'll start talking and then they're like, oh, well, I have to sell because I'm getting a divorce. And, you know, and we had all these problems with the roof, you know, and they just start spewing out information. He's like, it works every time. And he literally just stands there silently and lets them talk to him. And I mean, he still does the full home inspection, but he gets all of the information before he even starts it. But the whole trick is to get there before the realtor so that she does, because the realtor is going to be like, don't talk to him. Right. But I was like, that's genius. That's absolute genius.
So you're saying that if I want you to be quiet, I should just start a negotiation with you?
Yes, exactly. You want to shut me up, just try to.
You know, I don't know if you remember this, but a long time ago, this is before we knew each other as well.
Okay.
Back when we were negotiating Seller Summit, mm-hmm. like the split and stuff, I distinctly remember, like, I asked, okay, what do you want? And you said something, and you said, oh, wait, I shouldn't have said anything. Ah.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I was laughing because, like, I wasn't, that book wasn't even out yet.
No.
Like, I didn't know anything. I was just sincerely asking you. And then you went on this whole thing. Oh, yeah, hey, Tony, relax. I just want whatever you want to be happy with your arrangement.
But it's, so speaking of Seller Summit, you know, every once in a while, I mean, this happens at every event. The hotel messes up. Something goes wrong. They, you know, they can't give us the space they promised or there's an issue. And what I found was, you know, initially I didn't understand this principle. And so they would come to you and come to us or come to me and say, oh, we're so sorry this didn't work or that the power drop was wrong. You know, we'll give you 10% off AV. Right. And I would always go, okay, great. You know, like I would just take it. And then I realized that if I didn't respond right away, they would immediately give me more. So we had this situation a couple years ago where they forced us to move rooms. It was super inconvenient, actually. And they came and said, you know, we're so sorry about this. We'd like to take off, you know, 10% off your food and beverage. And I was like, And I literally just said, you know, like, because part of me is like, I'll take 10. And then, you know, there was like just awkward silence. And I wouldn't agree to it. I just sat there or stood there. And then they said, we could throw in some appetizers for the, you know, networking or whatever. I was like, yeah. And I didn't, like, I wouldn't close it, right? And then they were like, we could do 20%. We could do 20% off. And at that point, I felt like, okay, now I'm, and I was like, okay, that'll work, right? And like, I was so regretful because I was like, I wonder how much I could have gotten had I just never, ever said anything. Like,
the whole event is free.
Everything is free. You're not paying for anything. But when I said sure and they were like, perfect, and they like agreed so quickly, I was like, dang it. I should have held out for like high-end liquor, right? Like, what could...
Because we're such big drinkers.
Yeah.
Throw in the high-end liquor.
I don't even know what high-end liquor is, but I'm going to hold out for it. But I realized that, like, if I just sat there and didn't agree to it, they would just keep adding on because they thought I was upset. And I wasn't upset at all. I was just like, let's see how far we can take this. But it works. It works every time.
This actually just happened to me recently. There was a company that wanted me to do a TikTok. And they wanted to pay me $100 for TikTok, which incidentally would have like 6x my TikTok earnings.
TikTok earnings. I'm rich.
But I like the company. I was actually going to do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, you know, it got placed on a back burner just because, I mean, $100, I don't really care. But so they came back like a week later and said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $200. Right? And I'm thinking to myself, hey, I'm just going to do it for free. Like, I have a longer term thing with this company.
Yeah.
But the point is, just by waiting and not really coming across as enthusiastic, they literally doubled the offer.
Yeah. And it does work. It works. And this is something that you can use in any everyday life. Like, if you're trying to buy, a car today, because apparently you can't even buy one. But, you know, if you're trying to negotiate with anything, waiting it out, especially if it's in a market that is favorable to your whatever your position is. Like right now, it's really hard to buy a car, right? Because everything's there's no supply. Same though, like you don't wait out on a house right now. You got to put in your best offer like immediately. But in general, like that does work really well.
Yeah. So I guess that's more of like a negotiation tactic, which is it all falls under the umbrella of influence.
Yeah.
So the other one that was really effective for me was something I actually don't particularly enjoy doing, but it's introducing scarcity. Like there's this offer expires soon.
Yes.
Or like I'm only going to give you, I kind of did this to you once, remember?
You're in or you're out. Tell me by noon.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I was like, I like woke up to it. I was like, holy cow. He's found a new partner in 24 hours.
Because we had been talking about it for a long time.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, I just want an answer. Are you in or are you out?
It worked.
Yeah.
It's funny that you bring that up because I literally just did this yesterday. So, you know, I do email marketing for a couple e-commerce companies. And I, you know, we've been running a Black Friday sale. The Black Friday sale runs 10 days, which at some point I'm like, I'm out of stuff to email, right? The emails are it's like, how many times can you say 30% off, you know? So I've been trying to think of like creative ways to get people's attention, because like those mid sale emails just typically don't perform. Your sales are lower those days. The emails don't perform as well. So, and all I have to, all I can do is look at like last year's for them, right? Because I didn't work for them last year. So I created this email. I think I found it. I did a bunch of Google searches. I think I found it in like the Klaviyo recommendations or something. And it was like, do a low stock email where these items are lower in stock. Well, I mean, the reality is, unless you're having supply issues, nobody's low stock at Black Friday, right? Everybody's like full on.
Well, this year they probably are, yeah. But yeah.
And the perception in the world right now is that everybody's low stock, right? Because even the general public knows about the shipping issues and all this stuff. So what I did was, because I don't like to lie and I don't like to manipulate people. So I was like, I want to do a low stock email, but she just got all her containers. So her stock's actually pretty decent. So I went through her inventory and I found the items that had the least stock. So like, you know, if she's got 20,000 of one thing and 5 of the other, the 5 one's the low stock, right? Like,
right. I mean, you're not lying.
Yeah, not lying. So I wrote this email and I said, you know, it was very simple. It was like, these items are these are low stock, low inventory on these. And I literally listed out like 10 items in the store that had the lowest inventory, literally lowest inventory, lowest to low. That email 3x'd last year's email on the same day, and store sales were up like 80%.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, these weren't even like items that I would have purchased. Like they weren't, because that was the thing I was hesitant about, is like some of the items were like, this is not a holiday purchase, right? There's no reason why you would buy this over the holidays. It's a piece of curriculum, you know. But I think just,
oh, my kids would love to have math curriculum, yeah, over the holidays.
But that's what they want in their stockings, flashcards. Yeah. in a protractor. But I wasn't sure how it would do, but it's outperformed. I think it outperformed the email from the day before, which was a stocking stuffer email. So
it's funny you mentioned that. That's actually going to be my middle of the sale email also.
Yeah.
And we're not lying. Like, we are sincerely low on stock,
yeah,
on a lot of stuff. So you have to get the stuff
down. And I did pick the items that she had the lowest. And there were a couple items in there that actually do have like a lower stock, but they also are items that rarely sell. So she doesn't ever keep a high stock of those items. In fact, one of them was one I told her not to ever buy again. I was like, never reorder these. You don't sell enough. So, but yeah, the scarcity works really well. I was shocked to see how well it performed yesterday. I knew it would do okay, but I was very surprised.
So here's one thing that I gleaned from Dr. Cialdini, actually. What works better for scarcity is unit scarcity as opposed to time-based scarcity.
Yes.
And the reason for that is when it's unit-based scarcity, people are competing with each other.
Yes.
Whereas in the time case, it is not. So I found that really interesting.
Well, and we do that for the course, where we offer a free consult for the first so many people who pay in full,
right,
during the promotion.
That's correct.
So, and we don't ever say like how many. Occasionally we'll say we have a couple left, but like people have no idea. So they're more apt to purchase because they want to get the consult.
Right, right. Do you have another one, or do you want me to go on? Or
I have one.
I'm curious. I'm just fascinated by what's in your bag of tricks.
So I know I'm never getting anything I want from you again. So another one that I think works really well is to. Oh, I hate to say this. You know I do this to you too, though. Is you make them feel like they're making the decision. So, you know, you present a couple choices. This actually works on a sales page too. You present a couple choices to people, one choice being absolutely horrendous and the other one choice being completely overpriced. And so the middle choice is where you want people to land. And so you already have made the decision. You've already picked the thing that you want. You've already kind of created this, but they feel like they're the ones making the decision.
Yes, that is your main MO, actually.
That is my main MO, yes.
Yes.
It works beautifully.
But how do you set it up? The setup is difficult. Like, let's say you want me to do something. Set me up right now.
This is hard on the spot. Okay. Well, it's a whole series of things first. Like, so if I wanted you to do something, the first thing I would do is make sure that I had done everything you needed me to do. Like, I would have nothing. Like, all the tickets would be closed. Stuff would be updated. Like, there would be a lot of things. Like, I would tie up all my own loose ends first. Because then there's, so that's the guilt factor, right? You're like, well, she's already done all her stuff. So I throw the guilt in first, right?
Well, that never works on me because what you're supposed to be doing, you're supposed to be doing.
Right. But anyway, it works on most people. We already have the friendship, like all that's already taken care of. I usually just present you, I just present you. Well, with you, it's easy because I know your pain point is money. So I know. Well, and that's the thing. You have to know someone's pain point, right? Some people's pain point is time. So if you present them with two things, and it's all about how you phrase it. So if I phrase something to you as this was a way better deal than the other thing, I guarantee you would pick the better deal. There's no question about it. No matter how great the other one was, if the deal is better, you're going for the good deal. If it's something with time, then I would make something be very ridiculous in time spent, right? And I would make the other one seem super efficient and super easy to complete. And I know that they're going to go with the one that you find their weakness, and then you craft everything in a way that.
you know what's funny about this conversation?
What? No one's ever going to talk to me again.
Well, no, it's that now I just say, hey, why don't you just choose what you want? Why are you bothering asking?
Yeah.
Me?
Why do you even ask?
You notice I say that to you?
Yes. Or you say, is this one of those things where you've already made the decision and you're trying to make me feel? Yeah. Well, that's the other thing is that when you include people in decisions, they feel important. They feel like they matter. And you already know this about me because you're like, I don't need you to make me feel important. Just make the decision.
Right.
So.
Because we've gone through this rigmarole before.
Yes, we have.
But that's made the decision.
Yeah. Well, you let people have input in small decisions, and so they feel very empowered. And then when it's a big decision, they're okay with letting you make the decision.
But it backfires, right? Like, what if I give you something that you don't want?
I mean,
then you have to take into consideration what I said. And if you don't take my advice and whatnot, then I might feel slighted, right?
Sure. Sure. That doesn't happen very often.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Because you're good at it. I'm just saying there's risks.
And but also I will say with all of this, it has to be genuine. It cannot be like, I'm not deliberately trying to manipulate you. I know what's important to you, and I know how you think about things. So it's not like I'm deliberately trying to, I feel like my heart is for you to win too, right? I'm not like, we're partners. So you win, I win. Vice versa. You know what I mean?
Although occasionally I'll text you like hashtag well played or hashtag you're good.
Yes. Occasionally you will. I've had a few of those.
Okay. So the next principle of influence that helped me with my business was authority.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you why. Before I would, maybe it's just the culture, but we're not predisposed to brag about anything that we've ever done. It's supposed to be just like you work hard and the merit should just be known by others.
Yeah. That doesn't work.
But it does. Yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You actually have to, brag about yourself. I mean, it's hard to do actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you're great at it, but.
Oh, ouch. Ouch. Okay. All right.
I thought I'd slip that in. You're not publicly with me. You brag.
Yeah.
Right. Jokingly.
Yes. Mostly jokingly.
Jokingly.
But
jokingly.
That's actually, I totally agree with you on that. And that's one of the reasons, like, even with Google, right? You like added some stuff to your about page about certain things that you've done, because even, you know, bots understand the importance of authority. The other trick with that, little trick, is it also works when you make others feel like they're the authority. So let's just say we have like a triad, right? Like it's you, me, and a third person, right? And I'm negotiating with you, but right now we're in a conversation with three people. I'm going to brag about you to that third person, talk about your accomplishments, because I'm building you up all legit. Like I'm not going to make stuff up about you. I'm going to say things that are true. But then once I do that, I'm giving you a feeling of authority, because a lot of people have a hard time talking up themselves, especially around other people, which I think is good, because people that talk about themselves all the time are annoying. But I'm building you up in front of another person. So you're feeling like you have a lot of authority. You're feeling like empowered. And so once again, I'm just endearing myself to you.
This is a similar tactic to you telling a friend to tell the person that you're interested in good things.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I actually use the opposite tactic for that in certain cases. Like if I want to approach someone who's like way better than me in something,
yeah,
I actually don't talk to that person about that one thing that they're good at. Instead, I try to find something that I'm good at that they suck at.
Yes.
So I come across as the authority. It can be something completely different.
Right.
Like Russian math tips, for example, or microprocessor design tips.
Yes.
And like all of a sudden, I'm the authority in that conversation now.
Right. Well, so I totally agree with you on that. And I almost always use the MBA because very few people can like trump me on MBA knowledge and or like kids. Like those two things I usually win on that. But when it's a group of people, I like to build the other person up with other, like I like to brag about that person around other people. If it's just me and someone else, I'll do the same thing that you do.
Wait, so when you're bragging about that person, is the person you're trying to influence the person that you're bragging about?
Yes.
Okay. I see. Huh. Okay. I've noticed you've done that a lot.
Yes. It works.
So what is it that you want? That's my question. Or are you just cashing those in the bank?
It's just my Bitcoin account's growing.
Okay. I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about this last one, which is something that you do all the time also. You probably don't realize it.
Probably not.
It's Cialdini's principle of unity. And what that means is, like, we're in this together.
Yes.
Like, you have 7 kids. I have 7 kids. I know exactly how it feels.
Yep. I just did this on someone and you saw it a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes.
We won't say anything else. Yes.
Yeah. And again, I mean, this is all kind of, what's funny about all this is it's second nature to you,
mm-hmm.
but you mentioned finding the commonalities, right?
Yeah.
That's basically unity because you're finding what you guys have in common so that they feel like you guys are in the same group.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
And from then on, they're much more receptive to what you have to say.
Well, people love to find, this word is like not used much anymore. People want to find their tribe. They want to find their community. They want to find the people that can relate to them. And most people have unique circumstances that they often feel like I'm the only one that's dealing with this, right? So I think for you, one of the things that you do with this is like you make a lot of Asian jokes, right? I mean, because you are Asian,
yes.
So that's
I am,
it's
yeah,
fair.
Yeah. I only use those around Asians.
Exactly. But yeah. I've noticed that when you and I are out places and we run into people who've listened to My Wife Quit Her Job podcast, things like that, usually the people that are your raving fans are other Asians, mostly Asian men. And I like they're the people that will walk up to you randomly when we're walking around the marina in San Diego, right, and totally fangirl over you, which is still just astounding to me.
Well, it's fanboy. You said Asian males,
yeah,
right?
Fanboy. That's right. You're like the One Direction of Asian podcasters. But what I've realized is when you hear them, like when I hear them talk to you about the things that they connect with, it's the Asian jokes and the Asian upbringing. And because I think especially if you are a minority in your area or in your friend group or something like that, you probably feel like other people can't relate to like some of the stuff you dealt with as a kid or like some of the expectations you had on you and in your culture. And this is for any culture, right? Because there's just a lot of differences. And so when people get that connection with you, they immediately become super fans because it's like, hey, his mom did that same thing, or my dad said that to me too, or, you know, I had to go to nerd camp in 7th grade. Meanwhile, I'm water skiing every weekend, right? Like, so, but I mean, people like that connection and that immediately bonds them to you in a way that they wouldn't have with somebody else, like me.
Well, let's break down what Toni just did there. She did like a number of things.
Yes.
So one, you flattered me.
I did.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Pumped me up.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I'm well aware of these tactics
yes.
now. The other thing I wanted to say was that actually the majority of my listeners are actually females over the age of 35.
Yes, they are.
Because they want to have kids and have a family.
Yeah.
And this is why I think it's very important to reveal stuff about yourself, what your values are.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you keep that bottled up, then no one's going to ever be able to relate to you.
Yes.
Like if all you do is write like expository information or just information like teaching information and you don't reveal your personality, you're not giving people a chance to relate to you on some level. I mean, what's going to happen is you might alienate some people, but the people that you attract and the people who are like you will become super fans.
Well, and I think that's something that you and I both do really well is we use a lot of like self-deprecating humor in what we do. And when we're live in front of people, when we're on stage, when we're doing our podcast, we're totally okay with making fun of ourselves and really making fun of each other too, because at this point we're basically the same person sometimes at these events. But I think that that's the same thing. You make yourself relatable, you know, because I think there's that whole authority, like you have to have authority about things, right? But you also have to be relatable. So if you come across as too authoritative, then you're untouchable, unreachable. People feel like, oh, well, that's so-and-so, right? They can't find the commonality because you seem too unapproachable. But if you can bring yourself to, not that you aren't, but if you poke fun at yourself, if you can take a joke, I think that goes a long way in building that commonality with people.
And it's always the little facts that really stand out.
Yep.
Like people will come up to me and say, hey, you want to go to the casino and play some Pai Gow because of this random blog post that I wrote a long time ago.
Yes.
Right? I mean, just little facts that people remember. So it's important to just start revealing any little thing that makes you you.
Yeah.
And that'll take you really far. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.